The Zodiac Killer was a serial killer who operated in Northern California for 10 months in the late 1960s. He coined his name in a series of taunting letters he sent to the press until 1974. His letters included four cryptograms, three of which have yet to be solved. In a moment, a roundtable discussion on the Zodiac Killer. I'm going to introduce you to three guests as we continue now with our Zodiac Killer roundtable discussion. Ed Neal first heard about the Zodiac Killer in 1989-90. He had moved to American Canyon in 1989. That's just 8 miles from Lake Herman Road where the Zodiac case started. He attended Sonoma State University where Arthur Leigh Allen, the most well-known Zodiac suspect, attended in the 70s. And he began studying the Z case in January of 93. He received his degree in history in 1993 and received a certification in massage therapy in 95. He then met Tom Voigt online in 1998 and became a major contributor to his site and his message board. Here's Ed Neal. Hello, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks, George.
My pleasure to have you with us. Tom Voigt, of course, is a webmaster for www.zodiackiller.com. For years, he's been involved with obtaining and archiving all case-related materials. He's with us now, too. Hello, Tom. How are you?
Hi, George. Hi, Ed.
Good to have you here. And Michael Butterfield is a freelance artist and writer who has followed the Zodiac case since 1983. And conducted extensive research since 1991. As a recognized expert on the unsolved crimes, he has served as a media source and consultant for news articles, television documentaries, feature films, including Paramount Pictures' new film by director David Fincher, Zodiac, and has appeared on episodes of Cold Case Files and on the A&E Network and Case Reopened for the Learning Channel. Michael is completing work on what will be the first thoroughly researched and accurate account of this case. He is with us as well. Hello, Michael. How are you?
All right. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good. We're all here. All mics are up. And I know, Tom, you will be with us this hour. Ed and Michael, you're going to hang with me for the three. Tom, how did you start the website and why?
Oh, let's see, it was March of 1998, and I had a hard time really finding any good information about the case. There was a book that had been published that was widely available, and there were a couple smaller books that you could, you know, scrounge around bookstores, maybe you'd find them in a used box or something. But it was really hard to just have, like, one central location that was easy to access where all the information was in one place. So I thought, I had no idea how to build a website, but I thought, that's probably the answer. Build a website, put all the information on there. The problem is, of course, building the website is not that easy. And then what do you put on? I mean, how do you get this information?
Exactly.
And so it was a struggle, but I kind of learned that I had this kind of knack for talking people into giving me copies of rare items. And then once I realized I had that knack, then nothing really could stop me. For more than a month or two, I would make a trip to San Francisco and end up coming back on the plane with like a briefcase full of police reports.
Ed, tell us a little bit about the Zodiac Killer. Why was he called the Zodiac?
Well, that's a good question. Nobody, unfortunately, really knows. It's a name that he gave himself in his fourth letter to the newspaper. He started off with, "This is the Zodiac speaking," and that's what we've known him as ever since. He never provided any sort of explanation. All we can do is really guess.
Whoever he was, whoever he is, seems like he was a pretty intelligent person, very methodical.
Well, he was definitely above average intelligence, in my opinion. He certainly seems to have had quite a bit of schooling in, if you listen to a lot of the other investigators talk, I mean, he's like an expert in, oh boy, explosives, chemistry, cryptography, I mean, you name it. I'm not sure he was necessarily an expert, but he certainly did have a pretty good background.
And Michael, he sent what were called four cryptograms in his letters. What is a cryptogram?
Well, a cryptogram is basically just your basic code. It's a coded message that where you substitute symbols for letters in the English language. And the first code that he sent was not a simple one, but it was apparently simple enough for a couple to solve on their own when the government was struggling to do so. But the other codes, no one knows exactly what they are or how they were constructed, and they remain unsolved.
Were they trying to lead to perhaps other murders? He was known for five. Maybe there are more out there.
There quite possibly are more out there. The coded messages alluded, the first coded message alluded to collecting slaves in his afterlife, which I would think be another allusion to more murders.
Tell us a little bit about, and Ed and Tom and Michael, each one of you jump in here, about the cases. How did they first start?
Well, the first murders that are attributed to the Zodiac Killer started in December of 1968 when a young couple was shot to death on a road, Lake Herman Road, near Vallejo, California. And although there was no letters or phone calls from anybody or the killer claiming responsibility, approximately 7 months later, when the second shooting occurred in Blue Rock Springs Park in Vallejo, there was a phone call after that crime, and then the letters began after that.
They all, most of the victims seem to be young people. They also seem to be couples, with the exception of Paul Stein, who was shot and killed, I think, by himself. Is that unusual all by itself, Ed?
Well, absolutely, because his first three crimes did involve couples, and this fourth one was just, well, kind of out of left field, if you will. The ages of his victims were anywhere from 16, that was Betty Lou Jensen, up to 29, which was Paul Stein. And it seemed that that was what he was focusing on. They brought up sexual angles. Maybe he was frustrated, you know, really couldn't have any sort of relationships with a woman. Then all of a sudden, you've got Paul Stein. And it was just a single cab driver. Zodiac got into his car, Mason and Geary, down in San Francisco, drove to Presidio Heights, and just shot him right there. And nobody really knows why. It's entirely possible this crime was motivated only for publicity, because what little publicity he had before may not have been enough, but this one got him front page news. So it's entirely possible that's what this crime was all about.
How do we know they focused in on the Zodiac Killer on the Paul Lee Stein case?
Well, they didn't at first. They thought that it was just a cab robbery that went wrong. The only reason that Zodiac came into it was because, unknown to the police, he had torn he tore quite a bit of his shirt tail off. It was covered in blood. And he mailed a letter on October 13th, just 2 days later, or it was postmarked on October 13th, and it arrived at the San Francisco Chronicle the next day, and had a little piece of Paul Stein's shirt in it. That's when they realized that it was the Zodiac, because he started off with his letter, "This is the Zodiac speaking," and said, you know, here's a piece of his shirt to prove that he was the murderer. I mean, just to paraphrase.
Tom, seven known victims, two survived, but do you believe that there might be more out there?
Yeah, I think there probably are. He was, he was only the Zodiac for how many of those attacks? Three of them? I mean, he was... When he killed Betty Lou Jensen and David Faraday, he wasn't known as the Zodiac. He wasn't known as the Zodiac when he killed Farron and Majot. I guess that's how you pronounce his last name. I still don't know. I'd love to interview Mike Majot. I never have, but the first question I'm going to ask him is, how do you pronounce your last name? Because there's 10 different pronunciations of it. But he wasn't the Zodiac until he killed at the lake Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd. He killed Cecilia and wounded Brian. And that and the Paul Stein attack are the only two known attacks of his where he was actually officially the Zodiac. You know, the earlier ones, the two couples, they were he wasn't the Zodiac. He was just this anonymous guy. And even his first three letters that he wrote, he wasn't the Zodiac. He just identified himself as the murderer. So it could be that he killed in a particular way when he was the Zodiac, and then he kept killing even after he stopped being the Zodiac, which the last letter where he referred to himself as the Zodiac was 1971, but he wrote a few more after that in 1974. He just didn't call himself a Zodiac, so he seemed to have different
dual personalities. Yeah.
And he had also said that he was not going to tell us about his murders.
Right. Well, that he'd make them look like routine, killings of anger, like domestic squabbles, although I don't know what they called it back then. It wasn't domestic stuff. They had a different name for it. He said he'd make these murders look like fake accidents, etc. And he might very well have done that. I think he came close to getting caught after the Stein murder, and it might have just scared him just enough that not to stop killing, but to stop taking credit, because he didn't want to go to prison.
Did anybody ever identify him? Or, we've seen this composite, but how did we get the composite? Were they from the survivors?
Well, the composite? Yeah, there was. I'll let Ed tell about the San Francisco one. The Lake Berryessa composite might be of the Zodiac. It's kind of a round faced guy with hair parted on the side. But that was from some girls who were sunbathing who saw somebody suspicious. So we don't know that's the Zodiac, but I'll let the other guys tell you about this.
Yeah, what happened at Presidio Heights, when the Zodiac shot Paul Stein, there was no sound of a report or anything like that. There happened to be three teenagers in the house across the street. They happened to look out, they saw what was going on, and they assumed that Stein had been stabbed. They were unaware that he was dead. Zodiac was struggling with the body. This is when he was helping himself to Stein's shirt tail. And that's when they got a good look at him, is when he was in the cab, when he walked around. He apparently used a rag they thought could have been his shirt tail to eliminate fingerprints or sop up blood. And so it was just in those few minutes, we don't really know how long it was, that they got a good look at him. And then he just casually closed the door and walked away north towards the Presidio. And about 2 minutes later, there were two officers responding to the call, officers Donald Falk and Eric Zelms. And there was a mix-up in descriptions. For some reason, they were told to look for a black suspect, not a white suspect. So they see this guy walking east on Jackson Street, and he doesn't match their description, so they just drive right by him. And it's really interesting. Unfortunately, Eric Zelms was killed in the line of duty January 1st, 1970, so we can't talk to him, but Donald Falk is still alive. And he said that, first of all, they didn't stop and talk to him. They weren't looking for him. They were looking for a black guy. And they drove by, maybe got, 5 to 10 seconds is all he really got, to see him as they were driving by. And Eric Zelms apparently did not see him, so Donald Falk is the only other witness. And when they turned the corner, they were only like a block and a half away from the crime scene. And that's when they met the first officer on the scene, Armand Pellicetti, and that's when they found out that there was a mix-up in descriptions, and they realized they passed the killer, but by the time they went back to look for him, he was gone. So there were three teen witnesses right across the street and a police officer that got a very good look at him. That's where the composite came from. Okay. Although Donald Falk didn't have anything to do with the second composite, as a lot of people have tried to say over the years, the three teen witnesses prepared both composites that are known, in this case. And Donald Falk over the years has said, yeah, that looks like the guy, but that's about the only input he's had so far.
Did the Zodiac have a method to his madness, or was he purely random here?
Well, that's not really known, I don't think. You know, that's the kind of question that the killer would have to answer for you. But there's some theories about the methods. One of the theories is that his killings follow some sort of astrological pattern, and there's not really anything to that theory. There's also a theory that he was attempting to create geometric structures on the face of the earth by selecting these locations for his crimes in order to create mathematical angles. And there's some reason to suspect that there may be something like that involved because of one of the Zodiac's letters in which he mentioned angles and using one of his codes to use angles to find something on a map. But really, we don't know anything about a pattern, especially since the pattern seemed to have changed during the killings. It's not really known.
Those are the more rational theories. There are also some that I get emailed every day of the absolute lunatics who think that Zodiac killed JonBenet Ramsey, and all the L. Ron Hubbard connection, and Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes, and
there's also the theory that he always killed near a body of water or something named after water, and there's really nothing to that theory.
No, there's a lot of misperceptions from people who read maybe one newspaper article, or they catch the last half of a episode on TV about the Zodiac case, and they just assume that they know everything they need to know to start formulating these theories. And really, there's a lot to inhale here with this case, and you need to learn before you start to teach. And a lot of people don't know that. They don't practice that. They hear a little bit, and they just automatically make assumptions, and then they start spreading these crazy theories.
Yeah, the evidence is that the killings were random.
Mm-hmm.
His last letter was sent 33 years ago. What has have there been any FBI predictions or projections on what they think his age might have been? I know it's a long shot. I'm wondering if he's still alive or not.
I'm going to wait for an FBI profiler to actually get something right before I start.
Yeah.
I mean, the latest profiles, you know, if you read the profiles that were developed on the BTK strangler who finally got apprehended, and also the Green River Killer who finally got apprehended, you know, the theory has been for so long, and these profilers say, oh, if a serial killer stops, it's only because he put in jail or because he died. You know, they can't stop killing, and the ones that kill prostitutes, they're not homeowners, and they don't have a nice vehicle, and they can't have stable relationships, and they won't have kids. And Dennis Rader and Gary Ridgway, who recently got apprehended as the BTK strangler and the Green River Killer, have shown that that's all rubbish. So until these profilers can actually come up with something accurate, I don't know that we really should be following their guidelines. But
A description, though, you could say that, you know, the Zodiac at the times of the crimes in 1969 was somewhere between the age of perhaps 25 to 35.
So he could still be alive.
Yes, he very well could be. Dennis Rader was only 59 years old, I believe, when he was arrested. Mm-hmm. And he was still actively planning a murder at that time. And it's also important for what Tom was just saying that, you know, the FBI was brought in to profile BTK, and they were asked to assess a murder that may be connected to BTK and decide whether BTK was in fact involved. And they were all adamant that he was not involved. And one of the very first things that he did when he resurfaced in 2004 was prove that he was in fact responsible for that murder.
Gentlemen, this is a national radio show. We're on nearly 500 stations across the country. It's very possible when we open up the phone lines in the last hour, someone may call claiming to be him. In the event that they do, Ed and Michael, you'll be with me by that time. If there's some way that you can question that person, because, you know, the odds are high that they're frauds, but I want you two to be able to make sure. But let me go down each one of you very quickly. Ed Neal, do you tell me, what does your gut tell you? Do you think the Zodiac Killer is dead or alive?
Personally, I think that he's very much alive. His age estimate back in 1969-70 was anywhere from 25 to 35, maybe 45. So he could be in his early 70s now. And, yeah, I personally think, just my own opinion, is that he's in his early 70s, enjoying retirement, and probably living in Vallejo, right under the noses of Vallejo PD.
If he is still alive, do you think he continued his murder spree even up to now then?
Well, anything's possible, but it appears after Paul Stein, well, no murders can be linked to him at all. So I'd say with a high degree of certainty that that was probably his last. But then once again, anything's possible since there's so many unknowns in this case.
Tom Voigt, I'll ask you, do you think he's alive or perhaps he's dead?
Well, I think he's alive, and I think he's probably not in prison. The odds are if he was in prison, his fingerprints or his DNA would have been matched against the known or suspected Zodiac fingerprints and DNA. So he's probably alive, and he's probably just like a normal, you know, 70 or 80-year-old man watching Matlock. He probably doesn't watch the last 15 minutes of Matlock when they catch the bad guy, but he's, you know, he's probably pretty normal. Or normal appearing, you know.
I suspect, Tom, if he's alive, I don't know why, but, you know, I have these intuitive gut feelings every once in a while. I think he's got one final letter written that hasn't been mailed yet, obviously, but will be mailed maybe upon his death.
That's right.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I think there's reason to believe he may have been alive and writing letters as late as late 1990. And he could have an attorney or something that he's given special instructions to. You know, after I die, go ahead and send this to the Chronicle or something.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be at all surprised. I think he wants people to know his real identity, but he just doesn't want to get punished.
And he might have a family.
Yeah,
he probably does have a family. You know, I mean, look at the recent examples: Gary Ridgway and Dennis Rader, and they had not only long term marriages, but the children, and so forth. So I think the odds are that Zodiac was married at least at one point in his life and probably does have children.
And how about you, Michael Butterfield, alive or dead?
I think the odds are that he is alive just for the very reason that you said. I think the Zodiac has, you know, one more card to play, and I don't think that he wants to go out of this world and out of history without people knowing who he was. And I, like Tom said, I think he wants the notoriety, but he wants to avoid the punishment, the penalty for what he's done. If anything, he's probably something like Dennis Rader, who was arrested as BTK, in the sense that, you know, he kept all of his trophies from his victims. He kept records on what he did in newspaper articles and was very much involved in keeping track of his own history. And the Zodiac's probably going to turn out to be something like that, especially if this card that Tom mentioned from 1990 proves to be authentic.
We'll be back in a moment with Ed Neal, Tom Voigt, Michael Butterfield in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with our three guests, Ed Neal, Tom Voigt, and Michael Butterfield. The website, by the way, is ZodiacKiller.com. Tom, what is on that website?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, George, I wanted to say I can hang out if you want to have a third guest those other 2 hours, too.
All right. You go as long as you can, then. All right.
Yeah, I'm just thrilled to be on the show. I've wanted to have a panel discussion like this for so long,
okay,
and I'm really thrilled to be here. I appreciate it.
Okay.
The website, ZodiacKiller.com, is about 6,000 pages of information. So it's like it's bigger than, I don't know, two Bibles, I guess, and probably at least twice as many images. So it's a place to go if you want to be able to see the information for yourself and not just have to take someone's word for it. You know, like a typical true crime book, you pay $8 and you get maybe 350 pages of info and maybe a handful of low-resolution images. And you can't really see the police reports for yourself. You have to just take the author's, you know, word for it. And what I like about the web is that, you know, I post the police reports. I can scan them and upload them. So really, even if I'm the least credible person in the world, it doesn't matter because you're not taking my word for it. You know, you can see it for yourself. So I try to make sure I have just quality pictures of the victims. You know, for a while, all we had were some, you know, Xerox copies of their yearbook photos. And I just felt like... you know, I wanted people to see them as three-dimensional people instead of just like an old photo from a newspaper. So I've worked hard to get good pictures of the victims and as much information as I can on the suspects. I have information on thousands of suspects, but I publish the information on the public figures, the suspects that have already been named. And then discussion forums, like we have a chat room right now. There's 30 people in it from around the world, and it's usually pretty informative in the chat room. If you're not really that familiar with the Zodiac case, a lot of people, especially late at night, come into the room, and there's good discussion about all sorts of topics, not just Zodiac, but primarily we stick to that. And message boards. There are at least three message boards. We have, on the latest message board, there are almost 700 registered users, and that latest message board has only been up for a few weeks. So,
Tom, did you mention that you also have the high-resolution scans of the Zodiac letters?
Oh, yes. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, for free, I make available all the Zodiac letters and envelopes.
Color photographs of the Zodiac letters.
Yeah.
But that's creepy just to read and look at, isn't it?
I'm used to it. Other people who aren't, I think for Ed and Mike, probably, too, we're just jaded because we see this stuff all the time.
Oh, no, it's still creepy.
Hey, Michael, is the case open or closed?
Oh, the case is very open. There are a lot of people who'd like you to think it's closed, but it's very open.
Did it ever close?
Well, it was more that the San Francisco police at one point got sick of dealing with a lot of crackpots and problems. They just made it inactive for a little while. But it's never been closed.
All right, Ed Neal,
we'll go through each one of you on this one.
Okay.
How can a person who's a serial killer just stop all of a sudden? Ed Neal?
Well, there's lots of theories on that. Sometimes they just burn out as they mature. Dennis Rader, for instance, the BTK strangler, he just simply stopped. I don't think he's ever really explained why, but he was a dog catcher, and they found hundreds of dog collars in his shit after he was arrested, so possibly instead of killing people, he killed dogs instead. So it's entirely possible they can divert it. Or one theory that I have is that Zodiac wasn't your typical serial killer. Rather, he looked at others in the past, Jack the Ripper, the Torso Killer, and he thought, you know, they did it. I wonder if I can get away with it. So if he tried it in that fashion, it's entirely possible that he could just simply stop because he wasn't driven by what most serial killers are. But what it comes down to is nobody really knows.
Ed, what if whatever sickness he had, and he had one, I'm sure.
Oh, no doubt.
What if somehow it cured itself or whatever was causing this simply went away? Is that possible?
Well,
you know, whether
unfortunately, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist.
I mean, whether it was a sexual urge or maybe something happened to his family and he went over the deep edge, whatever it was, isn't it possible that psychiatrically he may have been cured somehow?
Well, I don't see why it wouldn't be possible if this was some sort of had some sort of sexual basis, as a lot of investigators have suggested. Then whatever it was that was troubling him at that time, for instance, not having a relationship, not being able to, you know, do anything with women, if he all of a sudden met somebody, that may have cured it. Who knows?
There's a difference between being cured and something lying dormant, too.
That's
true.
A good point.
Good
Michael.
Point.
Good, very good point.
Good point. Well, Michael, in your opinion, why would he stop?
Well, I think, it, as Ed says, it, you know, it all depends on why someone was killing in the first place. And, you know, in the case of Dennis Rader, he did say that as he aged, he was, you know, he was a very pragmatic serial killer and told himself that, you know, I'm getting too old to restrain a human being, and someone might be able to overpower me. And with BTK, he still did kill after people thought he had stopped. And as I said, he was planning a murder at the time he was caught.
That's right.
I think the Zodiac, you know, probably was someone, because he wasn't motivated by your traditional sexual sadist tendencies and things like that, probably it was more about the experience of killing and enjoying the attention that it gave him himself, even sometimes if other people didn't know. And so maybe he was doing it, we don't know about it, and maybe he didn't need to do it quite as often as someone with sexual impulses they can't control.
Next hour, we'll talk about some of the suspects. Tom Voigt, in your opinion, why would he stop?
Well, one thing to keep in mind is he had 4 known attacks, but he had like 20 letters. So the letters, I'm not good at math, especially after a drinky poo, but it's like 80%. The letters were like 80% more important than his victims, because he only had 4 attacks that we know of, and he wrote like 20 letters. So that, you know, the letters were written to newspapers. And they were written to Melvin Belli, who was just like a publicity machine. And so he wanted the letters to be read. I think it was supplementing his fragile ego. There were things that were going poorly in his life. And
he kept claiming victims all the time, too.
Yeah, he kept claiming victims. And I think he just, at certain points in his life, he needed an ego boost. And he would make sure and kill people. Like, if he just needed to kill, he'd just pick an easy targets like prostitutes or something, and then he can, you know, get away with it. But he was killing people that society cared about so that his letters would get front page coverage. Because if you go kill a bunch of prostitutes and write letters to the newspaper, they're not going to...
You have to do it about 12 or 15 times before you'll get in the paper.
Yeah, before you get in
that's true.
On the front page.
I've seen and witnessed a case like that here in the St. Louis area.
Oh, yes, of course.
Where it took a long, long time before police publicly strung these things together as a serial murder. Instead, we would get these individual reports that a prostitute was here and dumped, and they never put it all together.
That's unfortunate.
Well, it is. You're absolutely right about that. In this particular case with this individual, you said something very fascinating, that maybe he got married, maybe he had a relationship. I mean, is it possible that, let's say, he was getting psychiatric help from a doctor? Is that doctor, I guess he's not, but is he, do you
is
think
he bound he to be keep it confidential?
Yeah. You think he could go public and tell the cops, look, I think I got him here?
Well, only if he was, you know, that's the problem. You know, that relationship doesn't end when you stop seeing someone as a doctor. So that confidentiality may stay there. But I doubt very seriously, just my own opinion, that the Zodiac would ever confess to someone that.
Well, if he thought that he had an illness, like when he wrote that letter to Melvin Belli, saying, you know, please help me, can't stop, and I need help. Look, if he really thought he needed help, why would he write a letter to Melvin Belli? You know, Melvin Belli was like the original Johnny Cochran.
Yeah,
you
that's know, so sarcastic.
Yeah, it's like you go to a doctor, you might call 911, but Melvin Belli, all he's going to do is make sure that millions of people read your letter so that he can get some rich clients. I mean, when he did claim he needed help, he did it in a way that was obviously contrived, and his agenda was, you know, he knew that if he wrote a letter to Belli, that everyone would know, that there's no way Belli would sit on it. He'd take it and go sit on Walter Cronkite's lap and say, look what happened, look what Zodiac did, you know?
What about a priest? Well, We may be losing you, Tom.
Me?
We may have to reconnect a little bit. Yeah, I'm hearing a little scratch every once in a while.
Oh, I just my head itches.
What about a priest? Do you think he could have confessed to a priest?
What
Michael?
Do you think, Ed?
Well, I
Ed?
Think that's a question that, you know, if you ask me what I really believe, you know, I just have difficulty thinking of the Zodiac as a spiritual person.
Man,
I agree with that, too.
You know, I think that's also an authority issue. You know, the Zodiac obviously didn't have any respect for any authority whatsoever. And, you know, taunted everyone that he came and he wrote letters to and communicated with. And I don't think that he would view the church as something that he would trust. But it is possible. You know, you never know. You know, Dennis Rader, we keep talking about him. He did get married and then start killing, you know. And it's Gary Ridgway was married the entire time he was killing.
There might be a message there somewhere.
Yeah.
As I was saying, you know, one thing.
There's no connection between marriage and serial murder, hopefully, Tom.
Yeah, if Zodiac really was going to confess his murders to a priest, if he was truly sorry for what he did, then one would think that part of this confession would be to turn himself in, and yet he never did.
Yeah. It'd be tough to be a priest and keep that secret all these years.
Well, of course, the priest couldn't necessarily tell. However, one would think, like I said, the Zodiac would, after having done so, turned himself into the police, but he never did.
Yeah.
Ed, what was the method of his killing spree? What weapon did he use, or weapons?
Actually, he used a number of different weapons. He used a .22 caliber pistol of some sort at Lake Herman Road. He used a 9mm at Blue Rock Springs, a different 9mm in Presidio Heights, and he also, and this was a bit of a departure from everything else, he stabbed Brian Hartnell and Cecilia Shepherd at Lake Berryessa. Although he did have a gun, apparently it was a .45, so he's got a number of weapons out there.
Do you think in this era of computers, in this era of monitoring weapons, that cops could have found him at least right about now if he was doing what he was doing?
Well, one would hope so, but he did claim that he had bought, I think, most of his weapons through the mail order outfits or words to that effect before the ban on such things went into effect.
Uh-huh.
So the police didn't have much to go on. He just sent his money in, and somebody sent him a weapon. That's what he claimed.
Yeah, that didn't work for Oswald, though.
No, it didn't. Of course, then again, one can question whether Oswald acted alone or not. That's a different story all by itself.
Correct.
And that's another question. Did the Zodiac have a helper?
Well, that's a popular theory. You know, some people have come up with the idea that perhaps that one person was doing the killing and his partner was doing the letter writing. But the problem with that is at Lake Berryessa, somebody killed Cecilia Shepherd, and the same person who killed her wrote a message on their car door, and the path of the footprints left in the sand there, in the soil, indicated that the same person who killed Cecilia was the person who wrote the message on the car door. And according to Sherwood Morrill, who is the documents examiner for the Department of Justice at the time, the handwriting on the car door was that of the Zodiac. So in that one instance, at least, you have the person who is doing the murdering actually doing the killing. So it's like it's just one person and no accomplices.
What was the mood? Was it pandemonium in that region back during the spree?
No. Well, I'll tell you what, I was only about 3 years old, and we were living in Los Angeles. My dad was a newspaper man, and I can remember those little Cronkite episodes and so forth, and I knew that Zodiac was something to be scared of, and I was just an infant, and I carried that with me. I think that's why I had such a renewed interest as an adult. So I can imagine, you know, kids of that era, teenagers and even the grade schoolers that had, you know, police officers following their buses.
Yeah, you have to remember he threatened to assassinate school children.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I don't know
on a school bus.
That's almost as if that would create to me, if that happened today, that would be the same type of fear that people have about, you know, Al-Qaeda and terrorist attacks here, domestic attacks, not knowing what's going to blow up next. I can't even imagine, really.
What was his rationale for that?
For the blowing up the school bus?
Threatening to kill school children.
He just added that to the end of his letter when he took credit for killing Paul Stein, the cab driver. He just said, you know, I think school children make nice targets. So I'll just shoot out the front tire of a bus sometime and pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out. He never explained why. He did send diagrams of bombs that he said he was going to use on the bus and things like that.
Yeah, he did, though. He sent the diagrams and he made the threats, but it was almost as if, in my opinion, he just knew that if he made such a threat, it would get incredible attention, and he didn't really have an actual plan to go through with it.
Well, I think it's important to note, too, that you don't have to kill anyone once you start threatening to assassinate school children. You're going to be in the newspapers, and everybody's going to be talking and looking for you.
And something else to think about is that once he made that threat, how many police were on the roads protecting the children from the Zodiac and were not out actually looking for him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's the Bay Area boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, definitely. And to this day, I'm in Portland now, and so, you know, we moved north like a lot of Californians did, and it's amazing how so many people in this area now are used to live in California and the Bay Area, and they're up here, and they think about the Zodiac like exactly a boogeyman, because it was larger than life, and especially the younger people that were in school at the time, and also the older people who had never experienced that type of maniac, which is pretty common these days, but back then, nobody had ever done those things.
I'm gonna ask you three a very strange question when we take calls in the last hour. We have a special hotline that we can keep clear for a specific caller. Do we ask that question? Do you want us to try to ask if he's out there?
Oh, sure.
Why not?
Yeah, what's the point of bringing attention to the case if we're not trying to find him?
All right, and maybe he will have the nerve or the guts to call in, and you three can question him, because only you three will know, depending on his answers, if he is indeed the person.
Yeah, it's too late to have you not use our real names, right? So
it's a little late for that.
Yeah.
It's a little late for that.
Is there any way we can raise a huge reward right before he calls in so that he can make some money off of this or something?
I think if you guys wanted to make money on this, you would have tried that a long time ago.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
What drives you three in this?
Finding the truth.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is all about justice for five people and, of course, their families. And, of course, you know, for a lot of us that have been looking at this a long time, there's the mystery to it as well. This is an unsolved case. This is the Jack the Ripper of the Bay Area. So it's fascinating.
The Jack the Ripper of American history.
You know, we're going to talk about suspects in a moment at the top of the hour, but what about Theodore Kaczynski, the Unabomber? I mean, his era was after that somewhat.
Well, he's a tempting one. He was working at Berkeley at the time that the first Zodiac murder occurred, and inexplicably quit exactly 1 month later. And
really?
When he began his career as a non-member of society.
Was he ever looked at as a suspect?
Yeah. In 1996, Douglas Oswell and Michael Rusconi came forward with a theory that there was a connection between the Zodiac and the Unabomber, and that was investigated as far as Tom and the rest of us are aware of. They did check his fingerprints and his handwriting. I don't think his DNA has been checked, but his handwriting is very similar to the Zodiac's. And, of course, he was similar to him in some ways, but not similar in others.
I agree about that. Yeah, there's a good website, unizod.com, that goes over this in great length. And I don't know how Kaczynski was cleared via handwriting, because when I look at Kaczynski's handwriting, to me it looks like the Zodiac's handwriting. So I was told that the FBI, as soon as they nailed the Unabomber, they thought this could be the Zodiac. And what I was told is they compared his fingerprints, his handwriting, didn't match. They were able to place him away from San Francisco on 5 dates where Zodiac mailed a letter or something. And then when the FBI ruled him out, SPD took up the case and thought, we're going to show up the G-men. And they did the same thing. They tested his handwriting, his fingerprints, and they were also able to show that he was in a different part of the country on 5 different dates. But I don't know if that's actually true.
And he was a clever guy. He would take a bus for hours just to avoid leaving any traces.
The thing is, if he's a convicted felon, he's in prison, and his DNA is in a database, and I'm assuming Zodiac's is as well, and there's been no hit. So unless somebody screwed up the data entry, his DNA doesn't match whatever DNA was found from one of the Zodiac letters or stamps. But, you know, that whole DNA thing is a nightmare. That could take a whole hour.